It's 1:56 a.m. in the zone of alienation, and you're listening to Night Call.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. I am Molly Lambert, and with me here in Los Angeles is
Tess Lynch, and over in New York we have
Emily Yoshida. Hi, guys.
Hello.
How you doing?
Today we are going to talk about the new Black Mirrors and a Chernobyl conspiracy introduced
yes.
to us. And first we are going to talk about just some newsy news.
Newsy news.
You guys, can you put this blind item from our problematic fave, Crazy Days and Nights, about, okay, should I just read this?
Sure.
Okay. The foreign-born former A-list syndicated actress turned A-list celebrity has an encryption key that was given to her by the foreign-born infamous celebrity. It will only work upon his death. I'm not sure I would want to be the one who had that key. I wonder if he disappeared for several days and couldn't contact anyone, if that would trigger it too. So this is about Pamela Anderson and Julian Assange, allegedly.
Allegedly.
I take issue, by the way, I really think Pamela Anderson, and apologies to Pamela Anderson, I think she is B-list. I do not think she is A-list.
She's A-list name recognition.
They said
Sometimes
A-list.
They
no,
make
wait, wait.
These.
They said A-list syndicated.
Okay, that's
so
fair. That's an A-minus.
That's yeah, such a qualification.
I really feel like she was A for a long time. I think we have to
But this
deck
is
her.
Now she is Assange.
That's true.
She's yeah. That's what's so weird. I mean, just the whole Pamela Anderson, Julian Assange weird romance. Do
I know.
You want to call it? I wouldn't want to call.
Does anybody know the full story about their relationship?
No, nobody knows. That's what makes
it's just
it,
a mysterious.
It's just a
their,
mysterious.
Their friend.
They were just at a party together, you know, and the what was it? The at the embassy.
It's so cyberpunk. They met in weird rich people circles, which is mm-hmm, how yeah. all these people know each other. But the idea
they
that
met
she
in
has...
like the spa from Sexy Beast.
Yes.
Yes.
Like
the idea that Pam Anderson has some kind of like a doomsday key to anything.
Oh
is,
my God. It's a very 2019
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, we can't help but stan, I'm afraid.
I can't stan it, you guys.
No, it's bad. I don't approve of her relationship with Julian Assange, but I've been forced to clarify several times that he is probably a rapist, but he also is maybe being held for things that are just about releasing info.
Right.
Right. I hesitate to promote something by my partner / spouse on the podcast, but my husband David did a video years ago reenacting some friends of this filmmaker did a short that was basically a reenactment of the time that Julian Assange crashed in their house for like a month.
Whoa.
For what was supposed to be like a week and then turned into like he kept getting stretched out and he basically like was doing work on their couch and just like was filthy and like left food everywhere.
Wow.
And
I would
was
love
just, like,
to see The Crashing
yeah.
starring Julian
exactly.
Assange.
That's,
yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's The Crashing.
Well, that's basically what they made,
and
it stars David as Julian Assange.
You get typecast when you have cool white hair and
yeah.
know a lot about stuff.
Yeah.
And can just do like a totally blank affect on
do you have a doomsday key to David? That's the
I
real
know,
question.
I know. That's like the downside.
Is that romantic? Is it romantic to give someone the doomsday key?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What's better than trust?
I think that's like the great thing about being a celebrity, like on the order of a Pamela Anderson, is that like sometimes you can just like find you can just trip and fall into a situation where you have a doomsday key.
It's like, just like her show. Was it VIP? Was that the one where she was a secret agent? Love that show. By the way, syndicated A-list show.
Yeah.
She played like a super spy on a show that was on television late at night for discerning viewers like me. It was a good show.
It sounds
a
very
Silk Stockings type jam.
Yeah, it just it makes sense.
Yeah.
Speaking of the dystopian future present, more celebrities from the past. Bringing
celebrity dogs from the past, more like.
Guys, this came to us. I put this in the doc after it was posted in the Facebook group. So Barbara Streisand brought her three dogs who were cloned from her deceased dog to the deceased dog's grave and shared a picture of it on social media. Very odd.
I think it's supposed to be heartwarming.
It's amazing.
But it is weird. It's about what you would expect. A bunch of dogs that all look the same.
Well, isn't there like a picture of the dead dogs on the grave?
Yeah. It's like one of those graves that has a photo, a little circle photo in it. And then three triplet dogs sitting on top.
No. Two are sisters. One's a cousin.
Sorry. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And also we should name them because their names are amazing. Scarlet, Violet, and Fanny, who were cloned from Samantha.
Yes.
Wow. Samantha. You know what this is all preparing us for is that Barbara Streisand has cloned herself, clearly.
I don't think she'd want to be.
No, so she could live on after she dies.
Well, so more on that later.
Yeah. Well, we'll link to this photo or put it in the show notes, which, wink, wink, you can get if you subscribe to our Patreon. Always looking for an opportunity to plug that. Also, in news this week. Guys, first of all, a meta comment about this. Life Science is kind of like a bullshit website, right?
It's a mishmash.
In what way?
It has both.
In what way?
Every time Molly or Tess sends me a link from Life Science, if I'm at a computer, I will like go and search the keywords from the news story to see if it's popped up on any other like science news website. And I would say like one out of three times it does.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of like the Livestrong of science.
Yes, like, it is the Livestrong of science.
It's an aggregator. In fact, for a while, I was kind of confusing them and being like, huh, it's weird to just go from like lemonade to help regulate your blood sugar to like outer space. And then it's like, no, they're two different websites that are largely aggregators. You know, don't diss the source of the Moon Minute News.
That's right. Those things are true. They come from space.com, another reputable science website that everybody trusts.
If you work at Live Science, or if you work at a content farm,
I follow some of the science, the content farm scientists from Live Science. Some of them are real, but they do also post some bullshit.
We're so used to like the content farm, like the values of a celebrity or entertainment driven content farm because we worked places like that. But the science one is such a different game. It's like the moon must be the equivalent of the Kardashians for them. Anyway, this is not about the moon, though. This is about Bigfoot's FBI file.
Turns out the government
owns some hairs that
supposedly belong to Bigfoot. This is why we read Live Science, because it gives us the hard news. But it shows you that the FBI took it seriously enough.
I mean, they didn't throw out this guy, like, apparently just sent them some Bigfoot hairs being like, these are hairs that came from Bigfoot. And they didn't throw them out.
Yeah.
So
they were like, what a kook. They were like, we must keep these in case Bigfoot kills again, which he obviously will.
Bigfoot kills again. They were deer hair? Is that correct?
It was not possible to compare the hair with that of any known creature on this continent.
I'm reading here. Unfortunately for Bigfoot hunters, the results weren't what they may have hoped. In 1977, the lab examined the 15 hairs. A final letter from Cochrane addressed to Howard S. Curtis, executive vice president of the AAS, read like this. Dear Mr. Curtis, the hairs which you recently delivered to the FBI laboratory on behalf of the Bigfoot Information Center and Exhibition have been examined by transmitted incident light microscopy. Also, the hairs were compared directly with hairs of known origin under a comparison microscope. It was concluded, as a result of these examinations, that the hairs are of deer family origin. The hair sample you submitted is being returned. Yep. So, for most of the article, they were like, the FBI was taking it very seriously with these Bigfoot hairs.
See, that's the problem with Life Science, though.
They buried the lead.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's...
they had that science in there at the end.
That letter really reads like a rejection letter from like a literary magazine.
Also, 100%.
Isn't that what they would say?
Right, right. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Roy is nodding his head because he agrees. They are trying to, it's a cover up, guys.
Dear family origin. I mean, the fact, hey, if Bigfoot were a giant, like, you know, bear crossed with an ape crossed with a deer, you know, it would make sense. He wants to have the, like, the slick short hair so it can easily wick away moisture.
Sure.
It doesn't slow him down.
It depends on climate.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. There's probably different types of fur for different biomes. Speaking of biomes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the world has Chernobyl fever right now. I feel like we have not gotten into that. I was talking to you guys last week, and I was like, I want to watch Chernobyl. Everybody says it's so great, but I'm just like not in the headspace to watch a bunch of people puking from radiation poisoning.
Oh, but, you got the puke warning, because I was going to say, so I watched the first one, and
I'm
going to
puke right now. Just like you. So spew into this.
As anyone might do before they watch something about Chernobyl, like make a big old plate of food and sit down to watch Chernobyl,
no.
And you just can't do that. You can't
That's
do that.
That's what I did the first time I watched Dexter, and I was like really regretting it.
Exactly. Oh yeah. You would regret it even more with Chernobyl. I had a really hard time. I watched the first one, and I was telling Molly before we started recording that, as with anything that's been so heralded by critics, the last example of this being Horace and Pete, which, as everyone knows,
you were right.
Yeah, right.
You were so correct.
I'm on the right side of history with that one. But it was hard because I was like, everyone loves it. Let's give it a shot. And I know that there have been a bunch of articles explaining why none of the actors are using Russian accents. But I have a problem with it. It's like a mental block.
Because they're using British accents.
They're using British accents. They will not use and it was a decision that makes sense because it came off as kind of cartoonish. It was distracting when they were trying the Russian accents.
Or you could just have them have like regular
Russian
accents.
I mean, you could have had Russian actors.
Russian accented English.
To me, it was like so strange.
It took you out of it.
It took me out of it, and I just couldn't plow forth. I know that eventually that's the kind of thing that you get used to.
You were saying also the finale apparently leans really heavy into the kind of Russiagate.
No, I haven't seen the finale yet, but your friend Sarah was saying that, and I could see how it would go that way. I mean, it's on the nose from the beginning.
Maybe we'll get to it later at some point. The point is that a lot of people have been into Chernobyl, so much so that there is now an influx of tourism at Chernobyl, people planning exotic holidays to
risk
the site of a giant, a site of a giant nuclear accident. And we happen to know somebody who did go to Chernobyl as a tourist.
Before it was cool, just so
everyone
knows.
Yeah, before it was cool. Before she was a trendsetter.
Before the show made it spike in popularity.
And luckily, she called in with a tale from the ground.
This is Amy Nicholson. I'm a film critic and an old friend of the beloved Bats behind Night Call. And I'm going to tell you guys about the time I took a day tour to Chernobyl. This was in 2016. So it was 2 years after Ukraine had their Orange Revolution, where like over 100 people got killed. And let me just start by giving like the quickest, most passionate shout out to visiting Kiev. It's a city you have to go if you want to go to Chernobyl. And Kiev is the greatest place I've ever been on the planet, by the way. Like, you meet right outside the square where the revolution was, outside of a McDonald's. We got in this tour bus with a bunch of people, and we drove a couple hours out to Pripyat, to Chernobyl, where all that happened. And in our tour bus, the guy who was this like young teenager, really, 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 really lovely, always making these jokes, like he would point at animals in Chernobyl, and he would go, "You see that dog? It used to be a cat." Anyway, that's his sort of humor. And he was also playing stuff like The Chernobyl Diaries, that horror film, in the van.
Oh my
TV
god!
As we were driving up to go see Chernobyl.
That's so stupid.
Like, he walks around all of Pripyat with like this Geiger counter, kind of telling you where to step. And he tells you like basically try to keep off the dirt, try to walk on the cement, you're more or less fine. And the kind of things he shows you on the tour are, like, you go to villages where there's a couple people still, like, stubbornly living in the woods. You go to this river where, like, the catfish in the river were just gigantic, huge. And my friend, I went with my best friend, Eva Anderson, and she had this granola bar. She was, like, feeding the nuclear catfish granola bars, and they're just fucking fighting and killing for it. And then you kind of realize as you're going through that, yeah, like, the true horror of Chernobyl isn't that a bunch of people died in the explosion, which, to be honest, I feel kind of dumb. I always thought that's how it was until I was actually there. And you kind of get annoyed a little bit because there's all this artful staging for photographs. You know, you go to, like, the old kindergarten, and there's all these bunk beds and, like, artful blackened baby dolls left on these bunk beds. And you're like, actually, kids didn't really sleep here, honestly. It didn't really happen. Because the explosion happened before the town took off. So you're a little bit like, all right, guys, you know, and it's very Instagram friendly, but they just kind of let you loose. Like in the old schools and the old buildings of Pripyat, where you're like, I walked into a gym and there are all these glass bricks in the gymnasium in Pripyat that was destroyed. And to get this picture of these glass bricks, I climbed through like a broken shell. I guess my question to you, the Night Call listeners, is what is the weirdest place that you have been? And secondary, would you go back? I'm going to answer that really quick. Kazakhstan? I don't know. Remains to be seen. Kiev? I would buy an apartment there. Swear to God. Okay, what about y'all?
Whoa, Amy, that was such a good night call. Thank you so
Amy
much.
Amy took us on a journey. Thank you so much, Amy, for calling in. Amy's a great film critic. She has a couple podcasts. She hosts a podcast called Zoom. She also hosts a podcast called Unspooled on Earwolf. So she's a power podcaster. But yeah.
And a great adventurer.
Yes.
Well, she gets to go. The thing about, like, she goes on all these really exotic film festival trips, which is, I think, part of being like a freelance critic. Like, I couldn't go to a lot of these places where they send you there and they, like, give you the trip and everything. But, like, Amy would always take him up on it. I was always so jealous because I was like, man, that's, like, so cool. That's such a cool way to see the world is by going to the film festivals of the world and, like, crazy out-of-the-way places that you would never think
to visit.
She
also goes places just not for film festivals.
Just for fun.
Right.
Just for
oh, yeah,
fun.
Just for fun. Yeah.
She is the most adventurous person I have ever known, which is why it is not super surprising she went to Chernobyl.
Can I just jump in really fast to remind you guys that I wrote about the Chernobyl diaries for Grantland?
Hell yeah.
It was like, I was 9 months pregnant, and they were like, go see the Chernobyl diaries. And I was like, okay. So I
How
went.
How was it?
It was horrible. It was totally bleak and boring and depressing and awful. And I was so nervous I was going to go into labor and that would somehow, like, color my child's whole life. But instead, I was very overdue. And it took
my mom
month.
Saw a racer head while she was pregnant with me.
Oh, of course. Oh.
I think
she had
my mom
sense.
Saw Ron. The character saw the film. Anyway, so Amy wanted to know what were the most... I guess, what's the word you would use? Disturbing, maybe
dystopian.
Feels a little dystopian. Yeah, like maybe not exactly a place that feels like a bucolic getaway.
It's interesting what she was saying, too, that they stage the area to be sort of what you imagine from disaster
tourism. That's sort of
tourism.
Stupid. Like, that's a little disappointing to me.
Wait, but I want to know what's the most dystopian or weirdest place you guys have been? And would you go back?
I've been to Pompeii. I think, though, actually, like, the most sort of intriguing place, or it was all during the same trip, long trip to Italy when I was in high school, is, like, the part of Rome that was, like, Mussolini's neighborhood. Like, ooh. The super brutalist, like, Italo-futurist neighborhood where, like, all of them just have this total, like, I feel like I said this before, fascist architecture is, like, a problematic fave of mine. I, like, I'm so...
Yeah, because you like brutalism. I was just talking about this, though. Fascism is camp.
It is!
And I was just saying, like, this is so, to take it really serious for a second, but people staging, like, fun influencer photos or whatever in a place that was, like, destroyed by something really fucked up or, like, had something really fucked up happen.
Yeah.
It feels like we're so beyond the pale with that already, you know?
Right.
Like, it's going to happen anyway, and that's, like, if it helps bring tourism back to this area that's been so fucked over,
right?
Then
yeah. I don't know if the tourism is, well, yeah, what the doctor orders, but
yeah.
But the thing about the AUR, which is the neighborhood in, on the outskirts of Rome, is like, it's just a normal neighborhood. It's just like the most bizarre landscape to put, like, I mean, it still has like, you know, people have like laundry lines hanging out their windows, and it's just like normal, except all the buildings look like they were rendered in a computer. So it's this really weird clash of textures and stuff that I think is like kind of
that's
fun.
How I feel about those weird condo blocks they put everywhere here now. I'm just like, oh, yeah. Fascist brutalism. Fascist twee brutalism.
Yeah.
And like the paint will wear off and then it'll just be brutalism.
Can I tell you the worst place I've ever been?
Worst? Yeah.
I think I've talked about this before. Is Onion Town.
Yeah.
It's in Dutchess County, I think, New York. Mm-hmm. And it is a community of people who are very hostile to outsiders.
You said it's like the place from Making a Murderer. It's like a...
Yes. But then there was someone went in and took a video driving through Onion Town, and then visitors were attacked and stuff.
That
but
was
I grew
scariest.
Up not far. Yeah, that was the scariest place, and I would never go back.
Because some real...
Also
like...
because like I don't want to... I feel bad for them.
You don't want to get in a chainsaw massacre. Yeah. An Onion Town chainsaw massacre.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were talking about that place, that town, like, about an hour outside of L.A. that, like, smells horrible, but it's where all the onions come from.
Oh, I don't know about that place.
You know what? It's on the 5. I'm forgetting. I'm blanking on the name, but it's, like, by Los Baños. It's, like, it smells terrible.
Does it smell like onions?
It smells like cow shit. Like, it's just like
okay.
that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Molly, what was your terrible place?
It's not terrible. I mean, it is terrible, but it's also like interesting, weird, which is Jazzland, which I also, I think, wrote about for Grantland once. It was where they filmed Jurassic World, but it's an abandoned Six Flags in New Orleans that got destroyed by Hurricane Katrina and then just went back to nature.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's totally just a swamp now, and it is really... It's like sort of the things you see in the Chernobyl pictures. It's like a giant Ferris wheel with like, you know,
vines
growing all over it. But they've started using it for filming because they film so much stuff in Louisiana now. And they, I guess, make it possible to film there. But it still seems terrifying to me because it's literally covered in snakes and alligators.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. The abandoned theme park thing is like good. Like the Spree Park in Berlin.
Yeah.
That was like also on a list. We talked about the Dome Homes last week. That was like on a list. I found that on a list that also had the Spree Park on it because it's like.
It's like beautifulabandoned.com. Like,
yeah. And it's like, and like also it got shut down because the owners like tried to smuggle like some insane amount of cocaine into Germany or something. It's like one of these insane stories.
I think things like that, it gives you a glimpse of the post-human future. And that's why it's not just depressing because you're like, oh, actually, like things grew back here. And the Six Flags was
Nature
on fire
wins.
Yesterday here in Los Angeles. It was almost on fire.
Everything's on fire.
Oh, really?
It's suddenly very, very hot.
Yeah.
It became like 90 degrees.
Can
overnight.
I tell you guys briefly about a Chernobyl conspiracy that I learned about from Amy, who
Please
learned about
do.
It from this film festival? So there's a thing in the Chernobyl area in the city that I can't say the name of correctly. Pripyat? That is like a giant radio transmitter in a water body of water that was supposed to either send out or block like secret radio signals for the Russians. And it's called the Russian Woodpecker by everybody who, I don't know if that was the nickname they were given or if it's a colloquialism, but there is a conspiracy theory among the Ukrainians who live around Chernobyl, and there's a documentary about it called The Russian Woodpecker, where the conspiracy is basically that the Russians like did the Chernobyl meltdown on purpose in order to cover up that the Russian woodpecker was not working correctly or had not worked.
Can I briefly say that? So this was, it's technically called the Duga or Duja radar. It was called the Russian woodpecker because it would interrupt radio broadcasts with a loud tapping noise that sounded like a woodpecker. And so it interrupted like all sorts of different kinds of radio broadcasts. So people were just kind of randomly just subjected to this tap, 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 tap. And so when they started talking about it, they started coming up with conspiracy theories about what it could be.
Right.
Mind control, like, weather control.
We'll post a picture of it, too. It is like this giant sort of weird monolith in the water. It's very weird looking. It looks like a total alien structure. The documentary, the theory is not true. It's sort of a 9/11 conspiracy parallel. It's like it's like a Chernobyl was an inside job conspiracy. Right. It's like Chernobyl was an inside job so that the Russians could fuck over the Ukrainians because they don't care about the Ukrainians and they needed someone to blame for the thing not working. But the documentary, which I haven't seen yet, but Amy said is great. Apparently, it's just really interesting because it follows a guy who believes this to be true. And it gets just into sort of the history of relations between Russia and the Ukraine and how fucked up it is. So they're like, the Ukrainians do have a lot of resentment towards the Russian government for like how they were treated. And there is a lot of weird, interesting stuff going on under the surface. Everybody flew to England this week.
Flew to England.
We didn't need to fly to England, but we still flew to England for old time's sake.
For anyone who doesn't know why we say that, it's because when we talked about Black Mirror many years ago, it was not available to be watched in the U.S. before it was acquired by Netflix.
You had to go on a Russian satellite service to watch.
We all used to fly to England, but now we just reminisce about our flights to England and watch it in the U.S.
Good old Netflix. We love Netflix so much. All hail our leader, Netflix. I feel like I wanted to talk about these new episodes with you guys because for old time's sake, because we always used to talk about Black Mirror and the hoodies days. Also because I think that these are pretty good.
I think we all do.
I loved them.
Yeah, I've been kind of out on the Netflix era of Black Mirrors. I didn't even watch Bandersnatch just because, I don't know, it just felt like such a stunt. And I did not see how I was going to have a good time watching it. I think that a lot of the Netflix ones have been kind of a, like, they felt like fan fiction. Like, yeah, I've just been a little bit out on the Netflix era was with a couple exceptions, but a lot of them kind of just felt like kind of rushed fanfic or like a kind of not as interesting idea of what Black Mirror ought to be, or at least what it was for those first two UK only seasons. And like, I don't know, I was not a fan of stuff like Nosedive, where it's just like, guys, we're so sucked into the rating system on everything. What if the rating system was all of society? The show can do that kind of maximalism, like let's blow up like one aspect of modern living and imagine if it was like truly everything. Like 15 Million Merits, the one with the bikes, is one of my favorite Black Mirrors. But I think that Black Mirror at its best is sort of just like, it's kind of like, I was describing this to somebody else, it's like a can opener. Like Black Mirror is like a tool that like lets you access a discussion about something through fiction, you know, like which should be like all speculative fiction, but I think that Black Mirror tends to do it particularly well with like contemporary issues. And it's just become like cool to rag on it because, or like make it, like talk about it like it's more alarmist than it is, or really like assign like a really scoldy tone to it that I don't think is always there.
Yeah, people who are too cool. I don't understand people who are too cool for Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Before we start talking about Black Mirror, we would like to issue a stern warning that if you have not watched the three new episodes that are available on Netflix now, please don't listen to this next segment until you have. There will be tons of very serious spoilers, and we don't want you to get mad at us. Thank you. I've been super into almost all of the Black Mirrors, even the ones that I didn't like that much. And I really actually liked Nosedive a lot, but I think Crocodile may have been, like, some of the really bleak ones have been hard to swallow.
The ones that is just, like, punishing you. Like, that's when people make fun of Black Mirror, they're thinking of those episodes, and I think those are the least interesting
episodes. And that's what was good
about
these, was it was like he was responding to the criticism and being like, I'm just going to make, like, two of them are fun, and one of them is not as fun, and it's probably the least good one.
Well, we should say that, first off, there are three in this season because Bandersnatch took so much time, and the three are Striking Vipers, Smithereens, and Rachel Jack and Ashley 2. 2, which we briefly talked about last week because Molly had seen it.
But now we've all
seen it. I did not like Smithereens, which I believe was also the longest one. And
it is very long.
Yeah. And the one of the only Black Mirrors, if not the only one, that was not set in the present or very near future. Instead, it was set 1 year in the past. And it had, instead of kind of being in this like weird geographic location that doesn't quite exist and seems like you threw a bunch of places in a blender, it was set in London. And I felt like that was more on the kind of preachy, like, it was preachy. It's kind of like a PSA about don't text and drive.
Oh, see, I did not see it that way at all.
Oh,
like,
really?
No.
I have to say, the performance by Andrew Scott was so amazing
good.
That I still
yeah.
ended up enjoying it. Yeah.
yeah. It's a really incredible performance.
My husband was comparing it to Andrew Cunanan in Versace. He was like, it's just so like explosive and natural. And like he has such a huge range in it. And he really like drives it and propels it. So it's still really good.
Yeah. I think the performance is what helps it, for me, helps it not just be a PSA about not texting and driving. Because you don't get, that's a bit of a spoiler. You don't realize that that's sort of like been the place where his life went off the rails until sort of late, is that he was in a texting and driving accident and his fiance was killed in it. This guy who's holding an intern from a Twitter-like company. Like he's basically, yeah, he's holding a Twitter intern hostage. He's an Uber driver and he like drives out to the country with this kid and is just holding him hostage until he can talk to Jack, essentially played by Topher Grace on the phone. I think Smithereens for me, because of that, like very, it almost felt like a kind of palate cleanser, which is a weird thing to say because it was like a very dark and kind of rough hour plus. But it felt like such a return back to like very contemporary concerns. Like it wasn't this big, like, what if we were all on stationary bikes that we had to bike on so that we could be on American Idol? Like it was just such a simple idea. And I think it really like reflected how people feel now about technology and how they feel about people who have all the power that a person like a Mark Zuckerberg or Jack Dorsey have. And that frustration and like kind of just feeling like this bug, like under the foot of these tech giants that just like have this all like enormous power they can wield, that felt incredibly real and human to me. So I liked it for that. It is too long, but I thought that was really well done.
Also, another Topher Grace performance as a shitty douchebag.
No, I was saying like David Duke and Jack Dorsey.
And Under the Silver Lake.
And
Under the Silver Lake too. Yeah.
Yeah. He's played a lot of like just sort of hapless but awful people. Like I think Topher Grace brings such an accessibility to those characters. Maybe that's why he gets
them.
Because
that's what's horrifying about the performance then, is that like the moment where he's like, look, I didn't, like, he just has the Zuckerberg line of like, look, I just invented this in a dorm room, like I didn't think it would be all this thing. It's totally out of my control. And it's like you want to feel like sorry for him for a second, then you're like, no, wait, shut up.
Well, he's just so hapless that he's like the last person that you would want in control of anything, and obviously like he feels overwhelmed
because they all look
created
like
it.
They all look like wussy guys you could punch out.
Yeah. I have to say my favorite of the three episodes was Striking Vipers, which is about two best friends or good friends, I guess, who play video games together and then end up kind of in a romantic entanglement via virtual reality.
On a Mortal Kombat type game.
Yes. Their avatars have sex, but then in real life they are not attracted to each other. And one of them, Anthony Mackie, has a wife and child and, you know, he feels very conflicted. I thought it was such a great portrayal of virtual relationships and how those sometimes exist only on the virtual plane and don't transcend that at all. And I thought it was like a really nuanced handling of it.
Yeah. Anthony
Mackie's Mackie is so good.
I love
Let's
him so
take this
much.
Moment to appreciate Pain and Gain.
Oh, yeah.
He's so good in Pain and Gain. Everybody's so good in Pain and Gain.
This was such a different kind of performance for him. It was so subdued.
He's so believably depressed.
Yes.
You know? Like, I don't know. I think this has been one that I have thought about more than most other Black Mirror episodes, even ones that I really like a lot. Like, this one has really stuck in my mind. And I think
it's also funny.
It's funny, and it's like I want the Mortal Kombat-esque game where there's an option to just kiss. Like, like please, I would like to play that. But the response to it, like, there's been like a totally like homophobic or like gay panicky type response to it, like, oh, when your friend says like, do you want a game, like, and you freak out, and it's that gif of like Jordan Peele sweating, like that kind of thing. It's just like that kind of shit. And I think like there have been some points made by people that it's like, why can't they just be gay together? Why does it have to be this thing that they like, I don't know, that you fit into you have like a hall pass or something for it. But I don't know. I think it's such an interesting question of like.
Yeah, I thought it was about future sexualities.
Yeah, like it's like new. It's about, it's a totally new thing.
Right. I was like, it's about people who can't even like, they don't know how to qualify it because it's like not something that exists in real life
exactly.
at all. To
yeah.
me, it was sort of like I feel like I talked about this before on the show about how The Matrix, written by the Wachowskis, sort of as an exploration of like identity in virtual reality,
right? Mm-hmm.
Maybe more about how that affects identity in real life. This is just about like you can do whatever you want in virtual reality, but does it count?
Well, I was talking with our LA producer Roy about this because he is a virtual reality person who knows a lot about it, and he was like, I didn't feel like it was very realistic. And I thought my take on it was that it was a way to show relationships that form online, usually through prose, like message boards, emails. Mm-hmm. But because there's no real way to show that dramatically or to like make that, you know, theatrical and interesting to watch, that they decided to use VR like street fighting games because that's, you know, that's kind of like a more theatrical presentation of
right.
just how relationships form in this kind of like disembodied world.
Yeah. And it can't be them because it's not that they're even attracted to each other physically. It's mm-hmm. like,
what if you kissed in a Mortal Kombat game?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it reminds me of people I know have like had like, you know, long distance flirtations or something with somebody that they only email with or they only text with or even FaceTime with or whatever. And like how there's always something different about it when you're in person. And sometimes it's still there and sometimes it's not. And
right. It's like the
this is just like a heightened version of that.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like the heightened intimacy of talking to people online, which can yeah. totally be false
yeah.
also. You feel like yeah. you know somebody from interacting online, but you don't.
Well, I think that I would say that this kind of posits that it's not false, but that it's different. Like that their
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
personas are no less real, but that they just don't exist in a physical sense. And that
yeah.
a person can have an avatar that is them, but nothing like their physical self.
It's also good because
the enjoyment is totally real,
exactly.
too.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, and it doesn't condemn it. That's what also made it good.
Yes.
It didn't at the end be like everybody fucked up and is a terrible person and horrible things are going to happen to them, which is what you expect from a Black Mirror mm-hmm. sometimes.
Yeah.
It sort of had like a happy ending where they,
yeah.
you know, well, spoiler alert.
Well, it just says that you're allowed to have both lives, that both your online life and your real life can coexist if you balance them well. The question is, you know, either like if you completely block it out, then are you denying yourself pleasure? But if you completely commit to being online all the time, then, you know, can you really be happy? And so if you
yeah.
can find a balance, which is like obviously a real issue that we all kind of face, it's impossible to find. But if you can, is it possible to have people kind of accept that as a healthy choice for lifestyle?
I think the one reason I thought the end was a little bit tragic is just because like both of them at different points, you know, acknowledge the fact that they've never had anything that felt this good, you
mm-hmm.
know, and no relationship, no, you know, intimacy has ever felt as good as making out as Mortal Kombat characters.
But is that also like the cheating high? Like, is it just because
maybe,
they're
but,
doing something taboo? It's like people,
yeah,
because there was also, it seemed like it was a little bit going into the like, is it cheating to like pay a cam girl or whatever?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Sort of like,
I mean,
I don't know. It's interesting. That's why it's good.
Yeah. I'm still thinking about this one. I think it's become like a punchline really quickly ever since it came out. But I think it's like one of the most kind of thought provoking.
Well, it's also the best troll on gamers in the history of the world.
Of course.
We
yeah.
love Charlie Brooker.
yeah.
Because it's perfect.
I mean,
he loves video games.
Yeah, he's a total gamer. That's the
yeah.
hilarious thing. About
he was like, here's the subtext of all of the rest of every wrestling game.
Right, of course. Yeah.
And, you know, fighting game.
The last one is the one that we discussed briefly. The Rachel, Jack, and Ashley 2. The Miley Cyrus one, as it will probably be known more commonly. This is probably my least favorite of the three of them, but I still thought it was like pretty silly and fun. I didn't hate it. It was just like deeply silly.
I loved it. You said it was like a shoujo manga.
Yeah. I mean,
perfect.
All this, like, all the hijinks of it and like driving around a car that looks like a mouse to rescue your favorite pop star is like something that would happen on Sailor Moon, you know?
Yeah. Like, and some of that stuff too, I was like, I feel like whenever we complained about like, what if Stranger Things was just about like some girls going on adventures,
right.
You know, I was like, ooh, yeah. Girls going on an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like things are so depressing in the world. Like, I was just expecting something so bad to happen.
Oh, it was set. There were many kind of avenues it could have taken.
I was waiting for something horrible to happen. And then when it didn't, I totally was so happy and
cried.
Well,
as soon as you see teenagers and technology together, especially in Black Mirror, you feel like you know where it's going.
Just the tone is always, it's like suspenseful.
It's suspenseful. Yeah. And the fact that, you know, artificial intelligence and like a pop star, I mean, all of that kind of the free Britney movement really being tied to this episode of Black Mirror and having the timing be kind of strange.
The
with
timing
that,
is like,
say, like, do a Free Britney shout out at a show, or was that somebody else?
Oh, did she?
I don't know, but I mean, Free Britney.
Yeah, Free Britney for sure. We've waffled on this, but now we can say, now that Britney's well, in the Free Britney movement.
I think it was just like, this is what I said to somebody, because I was like, to me, it was a little bit like San Junipero, where it was like, maybe it is sort of like an escapist fantasy, but like that's what we need sometimes. You know, you only ever see like tragic lesbian relationships in TV shows to sort of have an episode where it like ends kind of happily. It just felt really good. And then I felt the same way about this. I was like, you only ever see like the pop star like self-destructing or horrible things happen, just to see them escape. It was very cathartic and nice.
I thought the part that I think the second half is where it gets like, it just becomes like high camp for me, and it's like enjoyable, but also I kind of disengage a little bit. The first half where Rachel has the Ashley 2, like, you know, Amazon Echo type device, and it's feeding her all this, you know, positive, you can do it, like, if you believe in yourself type messaging, and basically convinces her to enter this talent show, dancing to an Ashley 2 song, which is, of course, disastrous. That I thought was interesting. I thought, like, it's kind of taking empowerment rhetoric type thing and like turning that into like a personal advisor for you if you're a child, embodying it in that, which is like totally what those songs are.
Yeah, and Tollywood Hannah Montana was all songs like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just so funny, you can pitch shift a song into a major key and it
that's
becomes
so
a totally
funny.
Different song.
Yeah. That was the funniest
so
thing.
That's to me what also made it work so well, is that it is a hit on a roll. Is the summer hit, the Night Call summer hit.
We should just say, for anyone who missed this discussion last week or hasn't seen the episode, and also if you haven't seen these episodes again, I apologize for spoiling. But this was Head Like a Hole by Nine Inch Nails.
Yes.
Turned into I'm on a roll, achieving my goals.
I'm on a roll, achieving my goals.
Doesn't it start out though, I'm a hoe? I'm a hoe on a roll?
I think she says Head Like a Hole, because I thought about it. I saw the episode early and then I like couldn't talk about it with anybody, and it was all I wanted to talk about, especially that specifically.
It's like, but just like, I'm so like, it's the cadence of it is so off. It's so funny because
it's
like
so funny.
Ambition and verve. I'm gonna get what I
It takes a minute to realize what it is, and then you're like, oh, you just make any song in a major key.
Yep.
It is like a joke I have heard about how you can turn any Christmas song into a Hanukkah song by putting it in a minor key. Music theory here on Night Call.
Yeah, I think that this one is like, it was a good one to go out on just because it's like, it feels like kind of the blockbuster of the three of them in a way.
Yeah.
Like it's a big adventure. I feel like, maybe they need to go back to just doing three episode batches, because like they felt more considered, all three of them, instead of just being like, let's think of another like apocalyptic computer scenario. They all have their own sort of thing that they're working on and thinking about instead of like, what if you had to kill a baby? Like,
right. And Striking Vipers 2 was almost, I mean, it was complex. It mm-hmm. also did a great job. The Nicole Beharie, who played the wife, like they also did a great job of making her very sympathetic.
Yeah.
You felt for everybody in the situation.
Well, that's like the what's it called? The entire history of You. I thought that that episode, like a classic Black Mirror episode, was, you know, the first time we really could see the full potential of that, of just like introducing a bad idea into a like for a bunch of flawed people to mess with that we all ultimately feel sympathetic for in some way or another, because we can
see
ourselves.
Same with I'll Be Right Back.
I
feel like some of them are like, what if technology is good?
I think that's what the really great episodes all have in common. And I think
it's a double-edged Black Mirror.
But I mean, I think Striking Vipers, they use the same VR technology across, you know, in the whole Black Mirror universe, of like a temple sticker that, you know, your eyes kind of cloud over and roll back in your head.
So scary.
Which is so scary. And then I think my issue with Smithereens is that I think that gets across what technology does to people, for better or worse, so much more effectively than, you know, a shot of people looking at their phones, reading tragic news, putting it away, which it's true.
The metaphor for the thing works better than the thing itself.
Exactly. I feel like the thing itself just seems like Brooker is really
nailing it home. Well, it's also really boring to show people on their phones. You're right.
Exactly.
It's just like uncinematic, and to show people, it would be cooler if we put a little dart in our brain. Mm-hmm.
And then we just looked like totally passed out and like halfway dead and halfway like ecstatic. It's just like this, yeah. It's an interesting image.
We should watch Brain Candy.
Yeah.
Ooh, we should watch Brain Candy.
Yeah.
Another predict before its time.
Yeah.
Predictor. Thanks for listening to Night Call. If you have any... blah, blah. If you've had any strange journeys that you would like to tell us about, please give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT.
Or if you had any interesting reactions to these new Black Mirrors, or any Black Mirrors that we haven't discussed, let us know. Give us a call.
You can also email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. And you can follow us on social media. Twitter is nightcallpod. Instagram and Facebook are nightcallpodcast.
And support us on Patreon. We're on Patreon at patreon.com/nightcall. For as little as $1 a month, you can get access to show notes. You can subscribe to our book club podcast, which we are recording the first one this week, and it should be out by the time you hear this. I can't remember how dates work, but I think it'll be out by the time you hear this. We're our first book club is for Valley of the Dolls, and we're super excited to share that one with you, and we'll be announcing another book soon for July, so stay tuned for that. And yeah, subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, and leave us a rating and review, preferably a 5-star one.
Yeah, and when we hit our $2,000 goal, we're going to do a live call-in show. So please help us get there. We will try to sing On a Roll together from memory.
We'll learn the dance.
And thank you so much to everyone who supported us so far, because we're really close to 2,000, which is
amazing. Yeah, thanks everyone who supported us. We really appreciate it. This is the very earnest part of Night Call where we say we really do appreciate everybody supporting the show. We are just...
And it's been such a good way to, like, hear from everybody, just, you know, through people who have reached out to us on the Patreon and, you know, talking about, you know, our newsletter that came out this month and all the other stuff that we've been doing in addition to the podcast.
Yeah, we got mixtapes.
The mixtape. Yeah, it's just been cool to hear from all you guys and find new ways to interact with you. So it's been fun, and we hope to keep doing it.
We're on a roll.
We're on a roll.
Achieving our goals.
Achieving our goals.
We'll see y'all next week.
Bye.